doing a radio show today. But that would be exactly what I just said. It would be a lie because it was much better being in Fort Myers for 3-4 days doing my program from a baseball press box, watching guys mow grass and hit baseballs around and do things like that. But all good things must come to an end, and Daniel Gunderson and I are back in Fargo doing the Mike McFeely Show today in studio. Pinto, your number one. Welcome back, by the way. Glad to be back like me, I'm sure.
Yes.
Your number one takeaway from your trip to Fort Myers covering Twin Spring training.
Relaxation and optimism were the two words that I could think of that come to mind right away.
You're not talking about me, obviously. What are you talking about?
Well, I'm just talking about the fans, very relaxed, that are at spring training. They're just kind of there hanging out. They're not really fired up. They're just, hey, you know, it's what. And the relaxation.
They're on vacation.
Well, yeah. Most of them are. And the relaxation from the players in a sense that, or the optimism from the players in the sense that, hey, it's a new year. We could be good. We have all this stuff coming in. There's a lot of optimism there. Those are the two things I took from it.
I'm going to bring that to an end right now. A report out of Fort Myers today is that Miguel Sano has injured his elbow in some way, shape, or form. It's an ongoing thing with him. And there's a possibility, only a possibility, that Miguel Sano may have Tommy John surgery sometime and it would end his 2014 season. But be that as it may, good to be back from Fort Myers, back in studio. And it's even better because we have our monthly chat with Fargo Police Chief Keith Turnus scheduled for today. And the good chief has stopped by the studio and he's with us here at KFGO. Hello, Chief Turnus. How are you?
Very good. How are you doing, Michael?
I think you just heard. No offense to you. I wish I wasn't here.
Well, I see you got some sun.
And I got a little bit of sun on my bald forehead, so that'll peel by tonight, and I'll look like a chameleon tomorrow or something. So here's the deal. We have the chief in once a month. He spends an hour or so here. He takes your phone calls, answers your questions. So if you have a question about law enforcement or anything else, well, not anything else, but about, you know, police chiefing in Fargo, give us a call, 237-5948 or 800-880-5346, or you could text message us at 35270. I want to start here because of the big story when Daniel and I were away was really the story down in Alexandria about the two people from North Dakota, Fargo, I guess was their latest address, who ended up shooting at a deputy sheriff in Douglas County, Minnesota, near Alec. And then it sounds like the gentleman took his shot his girlfriend and then took his own life. The story, the positive side of the story out of that is that the sheriff's deputy survived because he was wearing a bulletproof vest, and that saved his life. So a two-part question for you, Chief. Number one, that's one of those things where it would seem to be a routine situation, a routine traffic stop of a suspicious car in the area, and it turns into that. I mean, that's, you guys deal with that every day. It's part of your life. Second part would be bulletproof vests are something that every law enforcement officer should wear all the time, I guess, huh?
No question about that. And you're absolutely right, Mike. It does demonstrate that even the things that we in law enforcement might consider to be routine oftentimes can turn on a moment's notice like that and become deadly. And I think sometimes I think the community, and or I shouldn't say the community, but this part of the country, we sometimes take for granted that, you know, we're relatively crime-free, we're relatively violence-free. And so at times I think we overlook the fact that being a police officer in Fargo, Moorhead, or again, this part of the country, it's not as dangerous as you might find in other parts of the country. And I suppose by way of volume of violence and crime, that might be true. But I will tell you that cops don't take those things lightly or for granted. And by way of this particular sheriff's deputy doing exactly what we would hope all officers do, and that's where their body armor, it's likely his life was saved. Here in Fargo, we take that issue seriously to the point where we mandate, it's required, officers have to wear that if they're in uniform and out in the field performing their job.
It is not, and that was my next question, was it is not mandated by every law enforcement agency that their officers wear a body armor, as you call it?
You know, if you turn the clock back about 20 years, there were a lot of police departments, sheriff's departments that didn't even issue body armor. If you were an officer and you wanted that piece of equipment, you might have to go out and purchase it for yourself. Even though there are still some agencies that either can't afford to issue that piece of equipment, or in some cases, maybe they don't mandate the use of that equipment. Those are far and few between. I think as a general rule, you'd be hard pressed to find an agency that doesn't provide that to their officers. But that's something that's evolved over the course of the last 15, 20 years where officers by and large are in fact wearing it.
And the thing that I always think about when I think of law enforcement, and you guys take a lot of heat from the public, and there are some people who just have problems, as you know more than I do, with the idea of law enforcement and authority. But what I think about when I think of the story down in Alexandria, Chief, is, as you said, it seemed to be just a traffic stop or some sort of situation he's checking out, and it turned into that. How do you prepare yourself for that every day mentally? And how do you get into your officers' heads that anything, that, you know, a car down a gravel road near a farm that would seem to be the most innocent situation ever can turn into a situation that might cost you your life? And that, to me, that I come to work every day and expect to get beat up by listeners. Mm-hmm. You know, big deal. There's some stress in my life. You guys could lose your life. It just amazes me.
Well, it's a challenge, and it's one that good police officers are always aware of. We train extensively, continuously, to make sure that officers are prepared for those type of situations. But you know, it is interesting, Mike. I can tell you that I get a call maybe once a week, maybe once every other week, from somebody who has been stopped for a traffic violation, for example, right here in Fargo. And their gripe is that, you know, while the officer, you know, tactically walked up to my car, they shined the flashlight in. Pretty soon a second police car showed up. It really made me feel like a criminal. Why do you have to do that? And, of course, the response I provide them is that we don't know who you are. We don't know what the situation or the dynamics are. It might very well just be a simple traffic violation that we're dealing with. But again, we can't take those situations for granted. We can't just assume that the person that we're dealing with poses no threat. For example, if the deputy in Douglas County had just taken a very casual approach to that, maybe he didn't put his body armor on that day. Maybe he wasn't as prepared as it appears he was. You know, in a split second, that turns tragic for the law enforcement officer. And so, you know, we try to have a professional bearing when we interact with people. But you know, there is a method to the means of how we carry out those duties.
Is there a mental health side when it comes to law enforcement? Because again, when I come to work and I have a bad day, it's because somebody calls in and calls me a name on the radio. You guys every day face the possibility of what happened in Douglas County. Is there a mental health weight that's there on officers' shoulders? And how do departments, different agencies deal with that?
Well, there is, and it can be huge. And it's not uncommon, I think, to find officers, especially those that have been in law enforcement for a significant period of time. You find those individuals have a certain degree of cynicism about them. They might have a certain degree of suspicion. You know, at times they can be difficult to interact with. And at least in part, it's because people don't call us because something really good is happening in their lives. It's usually something of some real consequence. In fact, we kind of have a standing joke between ourselves and the fire department that, you know, if you get into police work looking to be popular, you're in the wrong line of work. You really want to be a fireman if you're looking to be loved by people. So, but you know, we understand and we accept that in some ways we make for an easy target. We're the individuals that, you know, have to tell people that they have to follow the rules. We're the ones that hold people accountable when they don't follow those rules. And I suppose as a general rule, people don't like that when somebody's holding them accountable. But like I said, it's a huge challenge for officers to maintain an optimistic viewpoint when a great majority of things that they deal with are in fact negative.
Fargo Police Chief Keith Turnus, our guest on the Mike McFeely Show on this Friday afternoon. Need to take a break. 237-5948 or 800-880-5346. You can call and ask a question of the chief, or if you'd prefer to send it in via text message, you can do that as well. 35270. 35270. Do not text and drive. The chief is right here. He'll send somebody after you. No, he won't. He's just joking. Please include the word Mike so I know it is directed at me. This is the Mike McFeely Show on the Mighty 790 KFGO. It's true. Baby, I'm howling. Hey! Police Chief Keith Turner. us in studio with us until 3 o'clock on the Mike McFeely Show this afternoon. Just a few minutes left. I have about 4 minutes left in this segment, Chief. And I had Joel Vettel on when I was down in Florida to talk about the convenience store robberies, I think two within 12 hours when we were down in Florida. And I guess the question I would ask you regarding convenience store robberies is, it seems like there are a lot of convenience store robberies, and why would that be, number one? And number two, are they on the upswing? You know, in 2013, if you know the stats, were there more convenience store robberies in 2013 than there have been recently?
Yeah, there actually were. And in fact, we're going to release our crime data overall early next week. And we're going to see some increases in just about every crime category that we measure, which in many ways is actually a disappointment for myself and really everybody that works at the police department. We're certainly not happy with any increase in crime. But relative to convenience store robberies, or really robberies in general, they were up a little bit last year. I think we had a total of 55, which is about 13 more than we had in 2012. So it's not a drastic increase, but nonetheless an increase. Why convenience stores seem to be a very popular target, maybe more so than other businesses? Well, number one, they're open late at night. More times than not, there's one, and at times, I suppose, there can be two employees there, but usually it's just one. It's in some ways, it's an easy target. And that's why we've been working very, very closely with some of the convenience store owners to try and make their stores a little bit more of a hardened target. You know, for example, and it's not that Stop and Go was not working for us. They worked with us very well for many years. But now is the transition to those stores being bought out by Casey's. Mm-hmm. We've already put in motion trying to reach out to the owners and managers of Casey's so that when they get to town here, that they may hopefully they'll sit down with us and look at ways to make sure that their stores are less attractive targets relative to robberies. But fortunately, nobody's been hurt. And the good news is that we've been able to solve a lot of those robberies. In fact, I think later today, we'll be announcing that we have a suspect, and I think we have an arrest warrant that's been issued for the person we think is responsible for the last one up on 12th Avenue North. So,
oh, really?
Yeah. So what I'm very happy about is our success in terms of solving those cases after they've occurred. But our primary goal is to make sure that we don't have as many occur as we've had here recently.
Can you tell us more about what you know about the suspect on up in North?
Well, we by way of some of the video. Footage that we were able to capture, the detectives working on that case were able to track down individuals who were able to assist us in identifying that person. We've also got some other evidence that we've put together, and like I said, we've put together enough where if it hasn't been done already, it will be shortly. Okay. Where we'll have an arrest warrant issued.
Well, and I was, you know, call me naive, but years ago I went down to Florida actually for spring training, and I was in Tampa, was driving back to the Tampa airport to fly out. And it was probably 5 o'clock in the morning. I stopped at a convenience store to refill my rental car. And number one, you had to pay, of course, mm-hmm. the prepay. But number two, the convenience store was like Fort Knox. It was a window about this big, and I'm holding my fingers an inch apart, that you had to slide the credit card under, and the guy was behind bulletproof glass. And it was a whole different world for a naive guy from Fargo, North Dakota. I'm going, wait a second. I'm not in Fargo anymore, am I? This is ridiculous. I don't suspect that'll come to this area anytime soon, but there's steps that people can take, I think, to make their stores better, right?
Absolutely.
Fargo Police Chief Keith Turnus in studio. We have a couple of text messages in for him. You know, you brought up, Chief, that you said you're going to release the crime statistics soon, and we'll get, maybe I'll pick you a little bit about that and see if you can't let some things out. But I want to get back to that topic in a second. But we have a caller and a couple of text messages. Here's the deal. We have Fargo Police Chief Keith Turnus in studio on the Mike McFeely Show up until 3 o'clock. So if you want to join the conversation, you can. Please give us a call, 237-5948 or 800-880-5346. Karen in Fargo has a question about methamphetamines for the chief. Karen, go ahead.
Actually, it's a comment. A year ago on TV, they had a special that fortunately they ran more than once about a rural area. Let's say it was Iowa. I don't remember what it was. Meth use in a rural Midwest area. One of the examples was a woman who said she only used meth once and showed a picture of what she looked like before she used meth that one time, and she was just ugly and terrible looking as she was talking. And well, if she hadn't gotten that way after one use, she would have taken it for a year or two until she looked like that anyway.
Okay. Thank you, Karen. Not sure what the point of that call was, but the meth is bad, I think, is what we
meth is the takeaway
from that.
Meth is bad. We've seen some real success in terms of the reduction of methamphetamine-related cases locally. Part of that's due in part to the ingredients. You simply can't get your hands on some of the ingredients as you used to be able to in terms of being able to make it. But meth is one of those drugs that it in many cases it takes one time, and then the individual is hooked on it. The devastation that goes along with that, both in terms of what it does to your body, beyond just physical appearance. I mean, the caller's right. You take a look at some people who have been short time and, heaven forbid, long time meth users.
Yep.
The deterioration there is unbelievable. So, but you're right. Meth, bad.
Well, and you said that because that was it 10 years or so ago when that was the drug, and that was the thing where a lot of people in rural areas were nervous because people were going into abandoned farmhouses or, you know, off in the country and cooking meth out in those spots. But it, as you said, it has gone down some just because of some laws have been made. Some laws work to keep some of the stuff out of people's hands.
That's right. Anhydrous ammonia, for example, was one of the key ingredients. And there was a time 10, 12, 13 years ago where, you know, you could steal that pretty readily from just about any farm property around the state. Now, for the most part, that's secured. There's some laws that mandate the security of anhydrous. You used to be able to walk into a drugstore and buy as much pseudoephedrine as you wanted to. You could buy box after box of some of the cold medicines that are used. And now, of course, a lot of those things are locked up behind the counter, and there's only a certain quantity that you can actually purchase. So what some of the laws have done is they've taken the capacity for people actually manufactured on their own completely out of the equation, and therefore the volume of meth that's available, at least locally, has gone way down. It still does come into our part of the country, but it gets here from either coast, sometimes as far away as Mexico.
Let's take another phone call from Jack in Harwood. Hey, Jack, you're on KFGO with Chief Turnus. Go ahead.
Hello. I retired 12 years ago from the Fargo school system, and at that time, our resource officer at North High, I just happened to ask him one day what the price of cocaine in Fargo was, and he had a new fact sheet, and he said the amount that weighed the same amount as a standard paperclip was $100 at that time. What is the price? Can you say it now on the streets in Fargo?
You know, that relative to cocaine, we don't see a lot of that locally. It still has a presence here. But that's one of those drugs that we really haven't seen a whole lot of change in terms of
the usage,
the market, the price. That has remained relatively stable.
Okay. Thank you.
All right, Jack. I think what we're seeing more of, and there was a story from NDSU, the kids had the heroin. And I had Chief Ebinger on from Moorhead a couple of weeks ago talking about heroin. And I actually had somebody who was a heroin user in the program and had cleaned herself up and gotten clean. But heroin is in the news far more locally than it ever has been in my time here.
It is. And that's what's, I think, scaring some of us in law enforcement, that heroin stands to be the next new wave of drug crises that I think we might face here locally. Heroin has become much more less expensive than it was years ago. It's kind of become more of a drug of choice by individuals across the country. But you know, Mike, I'll tell you, just in the wake of the spotlight that got shined on heroin as a result of the actor in New York.
Philip Seymour Hoffman. Yes.
Yeah. By way of his death, I think that that put a huge spotlight on heroin and the issues surrounding heroin around the country. And I'll tell you, here's what's a little disappointing from my standpoint, and I think I can speak for a fair number of people in law enforcement. And that is, you know, for years we've equated heroin to, you know, junkies,
hardcore street junkies
that live in Detroit or New York or Los Angeles, and it's a back alley type of a thing, and it kind of was an out of sight, out of mind, and it really was the people that were being impacted by it were those that again, were just down on their luck people, people that a lot of us would prefer to just were invisible to the community. And yet, make no mistake, there were those people were dying from heroin overdoses regularly, and nobody said a word. And then we get a high-profile person that comes along, they die, and then all of a sudden, gee, we need to do something about heroin. So the problem isn't something that's just evolved here. This is something that has been a serious issue for quite some time. And make no mistake, I think heroin has law enforcement on their toes here locally, because I think that has the potential to get a whole lot worse here before it gets better.
Well, and when I had Chief Emiger on, what I learned from that conversation was that there's a close tie-in between prescription drugs like OxyContin and the painkillers, right? And then the way that Chief and Moore had described it was people can't get a hold of those anymore because their supply gets cut off. So the next closest thing or the equal of that is heroin. So then they become, you know, heroin users. And it's not the hardcore street junkie guy with a needle in his arm. It's college kids. It's high school kids. It's professionals. It's really across all demographics. And that surprised me. That was one that I didn't realize.
That's right. It is out there, and it's out there locally. And it's one of those issues now that we're going to have to pay very, very close attention to. Much better for us to be aware of and attacking that issue right now than before we have 3, 4, 5, 6 people that die locally by way of heroin overdose.
We have 3 college campuses in Fargo-Moorhead plus a tech school in Moorhead. Because of that, no, that's not the right way to phrase the question. Do you see more drug selling and buying on the college campuses, around the college campuses, or is it just straight across the board in our community?
Well, I might say at worst, it's across the board. At best, the young adults in our community do not account for the large scale or maybe the increase in drug usage. Make no mistake, there's a fair amount of marijuana use that's occurs in our community, always has, and unfortunately always will. But the college-age students locally throughout Fargo-Moorhead do not account for the rise in use or the drug use that we see is really across the board and in all economic circles. The affluent and the not so affluent are engaged in that activity right here in Fargo-Moorhead.
Well, I was going to say some drugs cost more than others, so it would stand to reason to me that people with money and good jobs often would be users of drugs as well.
They are, and it takes us maybe back to our issue with convenience store robberies. I think at least in some cases, the individuals that are responsible for that are desperate to get their hands on some quick cash so they can turn around and purchase the drugs that they need to fulfill their habit.
Fargo Police Chief Keith Turnus, our guest, 237-5948, 800-880-5346. A text message comes in, says, Mike, ask the chief if there is a law on the books concerning drivers with pets in their lap as they are driving. And I just saw that when Pinto and I went out for lunch today. Somebody's driving around with a dog in their lap.
Yep. No, there is. I've been asked that question several times. No, there is no law to have that animal sitting on your lap. I suppose there could be circumstances where, depending upon what the officer observes, you might be able to translate that into a careless driving or possibly even a reckless driving charge. But the mere aspect of having that animal in your lap is not unlawful.
So you can not text and drive, but you can have a dog in your lap, sit in your lap between you and the steering wheel, possibly down by your legs with the brakes and the accelerator. That's legal.
It is. Now ask me if there should be a law.
Yeah. Should there be a law against people having a dog in their lap?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Yes, there should be.
Oh, there's a rhetorical ask. Yes. Yeah. Okay. I gotcha. Another text message comes in and says, Mike, can the chief remind people that they are allowed to make right turns on red after they have stopped?
They can.
You're supposed to. His point is you're supposed to stop and make a right turn.
Yes.
Correct?
Stop first and then make that right turn. And if you're turning onto a multi-lane roadway where there's 2 lanes that go in each direction, there is that obligation requirement to turn into the inside lane. I get a lot of people that call and gripe about they don't turn into the inside lane. They make that wide turn and end up in the inside lane That's a basic rule of the road that I think a lot of people have either forgotten or overlooked.
A lot of lane drift going on everywhere, not just in Fargo. Tim in Fargo, I had this on my list too, Tim, so thanks for bringing it up. You want to talk about drinking in the movie theater? Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to ask the chief what he thought about the drinking in the movie theater and how they'd control that. you know, in that dark atmosphere and, you know, introducing young children to alcohol early and things like that. I'll hang up and listen.
Yep. Good question, Tim.
Well, speaking for myself, I'm not a fan of the proposal that's been put forward in terms of having alcohol accessible in the theaters for a number of reasons. Number one, it would be fairly difficult to control, even for all of the best of intentions from the business owners that have described the precautions that they have in place. But, you know, what bothers me more than anything else about that issue, and it's not just the movie theaters. We've approved providing liquor licenses to a wide number of businesses that are non-traditional in nature. In other words, mm-hmm. we're slowly but surely moving away from this idea that if you want to get if you want to go have a beer, if you want to get an alcoholic drink, you don't have to go to a bar anymore. You can go to just about any other place. We allow it at golf simulators. We allow it at pool halls. We allow it at any number of other places. And yet, I get a little concerned that we're drifting away where, you know, let's assume, for example, that we did allow it in movie theaters. What's next? You go get your oil change.
Hair salons.
Changes. You go get your oil change at Jiffy Lube, and they want to provide you with a glass of beer while you're waiting. To me, that opens the door wider than it already is in terms of being problematic relative to alcohol service.
Kev, a couple phone callers on hold. Need to take a break, though. 237-5948, 800-880-5346. Left on this program with Fargo Police Chief Keith Turnus in studio, so we are going to get right to the phone calls. Craig in West Fargo, you have a question or comment for the chief. Go ahead.
My wife has a rule. If the speed limit's 30, you go 30. Here's where we differ. When I'm sitting there like a sheep at 4 a.m. in the morning on the way to work or on a motorcycle, and there's no car anywhere in sight, and the light will not change, my view is if there was a police officer three blocks away and spotted it, you'd think he'd listen to reason. Her view is it doesn't matter. Sit there and sit there and sit there. What's your view?
I think I'd like to think that most cops would find some reason in the fact that you went through that light at that time of day. There's a lot to be said for good officer discretion. There could be any number of reasons why that light didn't switch, but to force you to sit there for hours on end would be, I think, unreasonable. Most cops, I think, would find the reasonableness if you decided to go through it.
Thanks for your answer.
Thank you, Craig. Now he can go home and win his argument with his wife. You know that. You gave him the ammo to win the argument with the wife, right?
Yeah. Let's hope the next call isn't from her.
Paul in Alexandria, you're not married to Craig in West Fargo, are you?
No, but I do have an answer to him for Minnesota. It is allowable to make a left turn or a turn on a red light after you've waited a reasonable amount of time, and that's two changes.
Oh, okay.
You can make a turn.
Okay.
But
all
it has to be at least two changes, and that's a reasonable amount in Minnesota, and you can make a left turn or a turn against the light.
Okay.
But the call that I have is on a one-way street. If you come to a stop, is it legal to make a left turn onto another one-way street falling under the right turn rules or laws?
It is. It is. You can make that left turn onto another one-way street. The only exception would be if it is specifically prohibited by way of a sign hanging there. And I think there might only be one. Well, now that now that NP Avenue and First Avenue are two ways, there's probably only one location in Fargo where that might happen. I'm trying to think exactly where that's at. But to answer your question, yes, if there's no sign there that prohibits it, you can do that.
Okay, well, thank you.
All right, but you can't make a left turn from a one-way to a two-way.
That's right.
You cannot.
Right.
Okay. Crime stats, you said those are coming out pretty soon. I think you teased us a little bit that the burglary numbers are up. What else can you tease us with?
Yeah, we're shooting to do a media event next Tuesday where we're going to release our crime data. And like I said earlier, Mike, I'm not happy with it. I'm really not. And it's not because there wasn't some really diligent work on the part of the police department to try and minimize crime. I suppose I could sit here and try to tell you that it's due in part to the overall growth of the community by terms of population mm-hmm. and geographic size. And I think that's legitimate, but I'm not willing to accept that. I think there's a lot of things that we can do that we need to maybe renew our focus on. Crime prevention is a huge component of that. We're going to see, like I said, our burglaries are going to be up in excess of 40%. We will have had a little more than 300 burglaries in 13 than we did in 2012. Like you talked about, our robberies are up a little bit. Our assaults are up a little bit. Our traffic crashes are up a little bit. And again, it's not for lack of effort, I think, on the part of the police department. But we need to get back to the drawing board in terms of working with some community members, some business owners, and really renew the emphasis on prevention. Hopefully, I think that gives us a good chance of driving those numbers back down on 14 in 14.
Now, when you say prevention, are you talking, because every time you're in here, you talk about, you know, burglaries are a crime of convenience, that if Mike leaves his garage door open and somebody sees my set of Titleists in there, they're going to say, and go in and take them. Is that what you're talking about here, or beyond that?
Well, we start there, and then we have to find some new and innovative ways, I think, to get people, again, both homeowners, business owners, people throughout the community, to really focus in on prevention. I've beat this drum before where the number of cars that were stolen in Fargo last year, I think, is going to be up slightly. And again, why? Because, I understand we live in a climate where leaving your car running with the keys in it is, you know, kind of a necessity at times. But, we have to find a way to make sure people aren't leaving their car unattended with the keys in the ignition. Maybe we need to put some emphasis on, you know, getting more people towards that auto start where you can't steal the car. Two sets of keys would be great. Something. But locking those garage doors, locking sheds, we had a rash of burglaries here over the course of 2013 where the victims of those burglaries were homeowners who are the snowbirds, where they vacationed over the winter months in Arizona. And so getting neighbors maybe more, paying more attention to their other neighbor's home that might be gone for an extended period of time. All of these things, I think, help or give us the best chance of keeping crimes like burglary in check.
About 1 minute left, so 30-second answer if you could. How about violent crimes, assaults, battery, things like that? Where is that sitting for 2013?
Well, it's going to be up, but again, slightly. Property crime is still the predominant issue in the community. Violent crime, the increases that we will see are going to be very, very modest. Okay. Fargo is still a very safe place to live.
It's still much safer than Fort Myers, Florida,
I
but it's just not quite as warm. We're just not quite as sunny here. Chief, thank you.
Thanks, Mike. I appreciate it.
Fargo Police Chief Keith Turnus, always willing to stop in when we invite him in, and always willing to interact with listeners and emailers and text messengers and everything else we